What's up, Cyclone Nation? New edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast here. Today, of course, we are from the Big 12 Football Media Days in Dallas at AT&T Stadium, a.k.a. Jerry World. Been an eventful morning. Of course, Iowa State doesn't necessarily go until tomorrow, but still a lot going on. And we've had the opportunity to be down here thanks to our friends at the Iowa Clinic and the Iowa Clinic Men's Center, who I think they've sponsored our Big 12 Football Media Day coverage for something like 4 years in a row now. It's been fantastic. We appreciate that partnership. A partnership I appreciate even more every day. I actually have a, I don't know if you guys know this, second child due to be born in just a couple of weeks. And it's been a just a really bit of a tumultuous summer for my family. Lost a couple of uncles at pretty young ages, and you kind of a deal where you look in the mirror and you realize how much you need to take care of yourself and get that annual physical and checkup. I get mine right before football season every year, every August. So I'll be heading into the Iowa Clinic Men's Center with Dr. Nicholson and Ankeny here in probably 3 or 4 weeks to get that annual physical. And I encourage you all to do so as well. I also want to give a shout out to Carl Chevrolet, who is a sponsor of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. They've got great deals going on, financing right now, Silverados, Equinox, Colorados, Traverse, and the all-new Blazer. That's $2,000 off. It's only 15 available with more arriving daily. So check that out at Carl Chevrolet, Carl Chevrolet Stewart. And I also want to encourage everybody to use the promo code Cyclones if you're going to the Guthrie River Ruckus here in a couple weeks in Guthrie Center. Chris Cagle, Diamond Rio, and a host of others. We are partnering with them. It'll be cool. You'll see the Cyclone Fanatic logo on the stage up there at one of Iowa's great country music festivals. Earlier today, I had the opportunity to sit down with Jay Jordan, our Cyclone Fanatic football analyst. He's down here with me in Dallas. And we, for about a half hour, discussed Bob Bowlsby's comments today, the Big 12's commissioner. A lot of legal business type stuff there. If you like the business of college athletics, you'll enjoy that. And also, we get into the different coaches that went today and what we think about those football teams. So I hope you enjoy it. It's Jay Jordan and I from earlier today. Here's our conversation. But I think you and I both got a little bit immersed in what Bob Bowlsby, the Big 12 commissioner, had to say. I know I did. I've already written about 1,300 words on it, and I'll have that up on the site here in just a little bit. But for our video and podcast audience that doesn't want to read that, first of all, the conference commissioner, he joked that this is the seventh year in a row that realignment has been a topic. But he also made the point that the Big 12 has not been in any expansion talks. You and I could go down a total rabbit hole on this because you're a lawyer and I love media rights and that type of thing. But what I did find interesting was Bowlsby, his one statement about if anybody knows where this is all going to be 5 years from now, you're delusional.
Right.
Talking about technology and whatnot. And that's very telling to me because in 5 years, this whole thing could be blown up as we know it. And there's got to be conversations going on behind closed doors. They're not just going to wait for 2 years to potentially be picked apart again.
No, and what I heard him saying and outlining, which this was by far the most fascinating part of the first part of this today, in my opinion. But what I heard him saying is basically the Big 12 is retrenching itself or creating a moat or a wall around the Big 12 by utilizing those third-tier rights, packaging them, putting them with a major provider, which will create asset value to the brand and to that financial stream. The other thing he also mentioned right off the bat was that they distribute 93% of the income that the conference brings in to their members, which is the highest among Power 5 conferences. So they're running pretty lean and mean with a 7% budget. He said most of that's going to legal fees, which is
going to be growing, probably.
Really interesting, and yes, likely a growing concern for all major colleges. So, but yeah, the way they're positioning themselves, they're trying to be on the front edge of the third tier rights. What I feel like they were, and tell me if I'm wrong, if you got this feeling, didn't it feel like they were? He was trying to outline that we are going to get established at the cutting edge of that market and then let it come to us when that everything turns over. They've already got something in place as opposed to scrambling for a new deal.
Yeah, a couple things. One, I think that the Big 12, as much criticism as it has gotten, rightfully so,
yeah, for sure,
over the years of not being proactive.
Yeah.
And this is back in the Dan Beebe, Chuck Ninus years. I think that when they decided to stay at 10, they were being proactive. You used the word lean, and I think that that's what they were thinking. They wanted to stay as lean as possible because from what I understand, and we've heard Jamie Pollard on our podcast talked about this with me before, is it's a lot easier to maneuver in a digital world with 10 than it is 14. And
right.
I just think that in 2024, these decisions and whatever, I don't necessarily think that, I think Iowa State, you never say never, but I don't think Iowa State's going to be in the scenario where it could get zapped like it was in 2010. Because I think it's going to be more on merit.
Right.
More on your fan base, more on, there's more Iowa State fans that would subscribe to an ESPN Plus than Rutgers fans. It's not about where you're at on a map anymore. And I think
that's a good point.
I think that the proactive deal is like that on a macro level. On, I think on a micro level, look at what Cyclones.tv does. They do a fine job of women's basketball and wrestling and all that stuff.
Right.
But in an ever-increasing digital world, they don't have the resources to do it with the right technology. And you partner with ESPN, which is owned by Disney, one of the most valuable companies in the world.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're at the cutting edge of technology. So to me, while this didn't make a lot of sense for the league to do in, say, 2014, I think a lot has changed in 5 years. And I completely understand what he's talking about now.
I do, too. I like the strategy. I wondered what the strategy was going to be. So here's the rabbit hole. What if the future of this is, or of college football and the upcoming media rights expiration, is not the Super Conference, but the retraction and expansion of smaller, more regionally marketable entities that play more to the subsets of the digital market? What if it's that? What if the Big Ten goes back to 10?
I think that makes the most sense. I've seen a lot of scenarios where you take 80 schools, just as an example,
yeah,
and then you, like you say, you chalk them up all geographically. Yeah. So then, you know, Bowlesby talked a little bit about dropping attendance across the country, makes it easier for visitors. That's one of the reasons why we talk about great television. Yeah. Well, like, think, like, when you're an Iowa State fan, you used to be able to drive to Missouri. You used to be able to drive to Nebraska. Like, those are gone. You could drive to Colorado if you wanted to.
The two Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Iowa.
You could drive to most games.
Yeah.
But you can't now.
No. No, y'all aren't driving down here, right? You're flying.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to West Virginia. I won't even drive over to Lubbock.
How far of a drive is it to Lubbock? You live here in Dallas.
I live about an hour and a half east of Dallas. It's nine and a half hours over to Lubbock.
Jeez, that's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. You can drive to Iowa in that amount of time.
I can drive all the way across Iowa and back.
Man. Anyways, I thought that was interesting. It wasn't really newsy, but I think that it's an ongoing conversation that we all need to be paying attention to. It's been pretty calm waters in the realignment world for the last few years, which has been refreshing. But I think everyone down here who's keeping an eye on all this has not even an uneasy feeling, but you know change is coming in some capacity.
We both feel that UConn news was bigger than what
yes.
what it's been let on. And it almost feels like there's a cap Let's just cut it here.
I'm anxious to see what happens with UConn, because I think if they abolish that program or even drop to FCS, what's the point in like New Mexico State playing FBS football right now? What's the point in some of these lower tier? I read a piece in The Athletic the other day about these schools that are drawing like 8,000 people a game. What's the point? You could abolish those things and put that money into your Olympic sports and be, you know, like, they're not making a ton. It's such a, the growth between the haves and the have-nots increases every year. What's the point? And I think a lot of schools are keeping an eye on UConn.
I think you're right. And you know, that could have each of those drop down and bolster the lower divisions, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with. I don't think it'll retract or diminish opportunities to play college football at those schools. They're just going to do it at a different level. So, to the extent you're talking about that, you're talking about realignment where we don't have super conferences, but we have a super set of the divisions. We create essentially a super division, Super Division One, with a second level, which really goes back to 1-1AA, like we had it right in the beginning. So we're not going to solve all those problems. Bowlesby was very interesting because he was very outright. He had a message to deliver with regard to the third tier rights. He had a message to deliver with regard to defense in our league on the football side and about our revenue growth. And then there was quite a bit of deflection on just about anything else.
You had a chance to get Bowlesby on the side afterwards. Jay got all lawyered up.
A reporter.
Yeah, what did you ask him? And I know that he didn't want to talk about it, but what did you ask? Because it was a really good question.
Okay, so just to go absolute nerd on everybody, he mentioned in his time at the podium, he mentioned that they spend a lot on legal expenses because there are a number of states who have student-athlete Bill of Rights. We know about California passing the statute with regard to the marketability and rights to be compensated for use of your likeness, which only makes sense. He even said that there may be a federal initiative in Congress regarding a student-athlete Bill of Rights. He mentioned a forum topic of whether or not they should look at antitrust exemption. All of those things. Oh, and then he mentioned building concussion lawsuits. Each of those things has to do with student athlete welfare and benefits. It's not necessarily a pay-to-play argument. There's more to it than that. There are different streams of revenue, just like there are in media, right? Cyclone Fanatic has multiple streams of revenue, and you know, if you're a YouTube guy or something like that, or a musician, that's the way it is. Athletes have the same opportunity, from merchandise to use of your likeness to pay for play. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, but what I asked Bobby Bowlesby directly is that, given each of those things, and you thought enough of it to mention each of those things, there is a rising tide in favor of greater student-athlete benefit and welfare provisions, protections. In the face of that, is there an opportunity for the Big 12 to get on the cutting edge as a competitive advantage versus other leagues of that by making certain reforms ahead of legislation forcing you to, or are you going to sit back behind the NCAA and your lawyers and just defend?
Which is what it feels like.
And that's pretty much what he said after he started talking about coaching salaries, which was completely off topic.
So he was ducking it.
He was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's an uncomfortable topic, especially to someone. The other thing that played into that was his seeming disdain for the transfer portal and what's happening in the transfer world.
Which he's been very vocal about that for about a month now, and it continued on today.
That back, yes. So I think that plays into some of it. Status quo versus a changing landscape that not only moves into different types of media, but a different type of delivery of product for each of these universities with relation to how they treat their student athletes.
Just feel like it's I think you said it well. It's uncomfortable. I mean, Ross Peterson and I had the conversations on our radio show all the time, and it's a little bit like our world's or our country's political landscape right now. It's like
polarizing.
It's very polarizing. There's sides. and not a lot of people want to like meet in the middle and talk about it. And I sense that today.
Yeah, and when we get there, lawyers decide what happens. Lawyers and judges, because we can't agree, so we get somebody to fight, advocate, and try to move us to a middle juncture. And that may be where we're headed. It may not, but it's certainly pretty interesting that we sit here today, and one of the first things he mentions is that the expenses that are lean are mostly put into legal expenses, which are just growing.
Yeah.
He said, didn't he say that, I guess we got it in front of us here, but he said something about the concussion lawsuits being added to every week.
Yeah.
That they've got some,
adding plaintiffs every week.
Adding, I think, plaintiffs to those, and those are just going to keep going. You can argue and debate what the implications of that will be, ultimately. Some think it'll change the landscape of football, how it's played. Some think it'll go away. But regardless, those are debilitating injuries that require a ton of money.
All right, that's the legal mumbo-jumbo. Let's talk a little football from down here at the Big 12 Media Days.
Did we hear anything about football?
Well, I mean, so we start with Les Miles, who...
Yeah, he said something about football.
Guys, I don't even... If you're watching on Facebook or listening on the podcast network, the opening statement Les Miles gave about Puka Williams, and that, again, not football. It's an off-the-field major problem for Kansas and really a kind of a gross situation. I think Les Miles, in his mind, was trying to get ahead of this story, and he just made it worse. I don't even really know how to analyze it other than saying I'm encouraging you all to go and watch the video yourself, and I guess you can make the judgment. But, Jay, Les Miles' time on the stand today is supposed to be like a – it's supposed to be this, like, new look for Kansas football. We're moving forward, and the losing's behind us. Got a national championship coach. It was one of the most awkward 15 minutes that I've ever seen in one of these deals, which is saying a lot. I've sat through a lot of Mike Leach press conferences here.
Yeah.
I don't know what Kansas was thinking, or if I don't even know if Kansas could make the decision to send him up there like that, but it was really bad.
It felt like he was unprepared, completely unprepared, unfamiliar with his team or even the situation, other than to say, here are your bullet points, go take care of this, which he didn't do.
No, he made it worse.
No, it was literally... much silence.
Yeah.
Between comments.
Like 5 seconds between words at
while
some point.
He read and pulled papers up, and it was just very curious. So it was either a masterfully done misdirection and deflection, or it...
I hope that's what it was.
That's optimistic. So, or it's an indication that he's not engaged at the level you need to be if you're going to take a program at the level of Kansas and move it around. Then what he did say about football was disturbing. So.
Well, the... Yeah, like, I'm getting the sense that Kansas is going to do a lot of, like, two tight ends and fullbacks and, like, basically the reason he got fired at LSU. Because he wouldn't evolve offensively.
No, and he spent a lot of time talking about, you know, I'm going to play a system that fits my players, which he never has done before, so he'll be a leopard changing his spots.
And he's 65.
And he's 65. More importantly, defensively, he said we're going to switch to a 3-4 from a 4-3, which they played a 3-3 stack last year, not 4-3.
Which is problematic, if he didn't know.
And then there was another question from the guy about the offense. He says, I don't know what the stats are from last year. I don't know how they're productive, but we're going to try to score. But the movement to a 3-4 is, that's not easily accomplished because a 3-4 requires a specific type of hybrid edge athlete to run effectively, and I'm not sure Kansas has that. Now, the one thing he did say is we're going to blitz.
That's great.
Yeah. And they've got a decent secondary. So they're going to blitz and rely on their secondary to cover behind it and challenge you to get there, which means they'll get beat 65-10 most games, but they'll catch somebody. So we just don't want to be that somebody.
Valid. I thought of all the football conversations, I thought Mike Gundy put on a pretty good show today, and in the sense that he really put last season on his shoulders, talked about it, really profound stuff. He was comparing it to like being a dad and like letting things slip with your third child, and then they end up screwing up later in life. And like it, I thought he had a pretty refreshing press conference today, and he seems energized. I think that their defense gets better under year two of their defensive coordinator. He talked about taking too many risks, being too aggressive defensively last year. The most profound thing I thought he said, I actually wrote it down. And I think this sums up Big 12 football pretty well. When he goes, he's talking about opposing offensive coordinators in this league, quote, not only trying to score, but score every play.
Yeah.
And discussed how sometimes as a new defensive coordinator in this league, that's a difficult thing to grasp.
It is. It's a challenge that the Big 12 presents. It's also an interesting, just philosophically, from the standpoint of an offensive coordinator. I like to call it playing beyond the chains and playing behind the chains. So we, you know, to put it in Iowa State terms, our staff last year played behind the chains on almost every play, but every once in a while they'd open it up and go for the jugular. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, even Texas to some extent. Are playing wide open, Baylor, and literally trying to score every play. That's the point of those type of offenses, is we're going to create enough pressure on you vertically to put you on your heels and move you in a position that we can score. And that's fine. We're going to do it every play. We're going to be explosive. It's a mindset. And that is difficult defensively to rotate to, because you've got to try to stop stuff deep. It's the brilliance of Iowa State's defensive plan. Iowa State's defensive plan is predicated on stopping the big play.
Yeah.
So now when you're stopped the big play, they've got to grind and they can't try to score on every play, and it's difficult for them to do. That's the perfect example of what Gundy was saying and why that defense works the way it works.
Gary Patterson went today. Matt Wells, the new coach at Texas Tech, and Lincoln Riley. I don't know. I've thought this, and my preseason poll indicated it as well. But I feel like Oklahoma State and TCU are both better than what most people think, and I would probably. Well, I'll leave it there. I have some more research I'd like to do on Baylor before I really have a opinion on them this year. But I do think both Gundy and Patterson, to some extent, have bounce back seasons. What do you think?
Major question on both of those is, and Patterson did nothing to help us today. He said he's got six quarterbacks. He's happy with all of them, happy with the work they've done, and we'll go into the season with six quarterbacks.
Including the freshman Duggan from Iowa.
Including Duggan, that, yes, our comrade in arms asked about. But he's happy with all of them, so he gave us nothing on that front. But that's a big question. That's what's plagued them and why they've been 7-6 the last 2 years. Is the one thing he did say is they meant that. He said when we were 3-5, we were negative 12 in the turnover margin. When we went 4-1 to end the year, we were plus 8 in the turnover margin. It's that simple. Well, guess where all that comes from?
Yeah.
The quarterback position.
Decision-making.
Yeah, decision-making at the quarterback position. So that's what they've got to overcome. If they get that right in any solvable form, you're going to look at a Gary Patterson 10-win year. Oklahoma State, same thing. They've got more to cover. They lost most of their front seven, or at least the impact players from their front seven. While they're fine in the secondary, they've got to make significant strides defensively to get back. And Spencer Sanders, they weren't great defensively before, but Mason Rudolph would beat your socks off on offense.
You know they're going to score 50 points.
Right. You know, in the breakout sessions, I'm going to try to ask Coach Gundy, if I get the chance, about they're set up really well to pivot to the running game with Spencer Sanders as a very mobile quarterback, Chuba Hubbard as a...
He's really good.
I can't even say that. Sounds like Hubba Bubba.
Yeah.
Bubba Gump.
We know what you mean.
Yeah, Chuba, the fast dude. With Hubbard running the ball, their offensive line is mostly intact, where they can make a really nice pivot and then go over the top on play action to Tylan Wallace. If they make that type of deal or make that type of progress, both those teams can win that. The only thing that sets Baylor behind them is that Baylor's not as deep.
I just have a hard time with Baylor.
I hate them.
I know you do. I have a hard time. They just scream 7-5 to me. I look at their roster on paper. I think Rule's a pretty good coach. I have a hard time, though. Like, why is he trying to leave every year? There's still that whole culture there. Like, I have a hard time putting them over than, like, a 7-5 football team. Even though, like, you look at their schedule, you look at what they have on paper coming back, really good quarterback. I don't know. That's the one team I think in this league, if I look at all of them, what I'm doing right now, I don't feel like I have a feel on Baylor.
They have a very favorable schedule, so all the big boys have to come to Baylor to play. That's Oklahoma, Texas, Iowa State. I think either TCU or Oklahoma State are at Baylor, so all their most difficult games are at home. So if they do get it rolling, that's going to help them, and they'll be all right. I'm not as sold on Brewer. I think he's reckless, and I'm not – if they've trained that out of him, okay, but I think he's reckless and a hothead. I think we saw that getting kicked out of the game against Iowa State last year. I also think that Jalen Hurd was such a huge point of versatility for their offense and allowed them to play ball control to keep their defense from being exposed, but that really aided and jumped them ahead in their development curve. So from that standpoint, yeah, I'd definitely put Baylor as the least likely from a talent standpoint, and play schedule may give them a boost that could pop them up above the three teams we were just talking about.
So you've got I have Texas winning the league.
Me too.
You did too. Okay. Yeah. So I've got Texas, Oklahoma, Iowa State. And then I think 4-6 is the most difficult to tab in the league. I ended up going TCU, Oklahoma State, Baylor in that order. Where would you be if you had to put those three?
If I had to make a ranking?
Or maybe even you want to throw Texas Tech in there. Like, I don't know.
I don't.
Okay.
But
So you would put those three, 4-6.
Yeah, and I would probably be Oklahoma State, TCU, Baylor.
Okay. So we're on the same spot with Baylor then. That's just – it's still not a great home field advantage either. I know all the big boys have to go there. But it's not what it was, though. When you don't play the style – like, when the Bryles teams – it's like Hilton. Hilton's so much nastier when they're going up and down and playing fast.
Right.
And right?
It's fast break football.
When it's, you know, Tim Floyd's slow it down style, and I know the old timers are rolling their eyes at me. It was great back then. I understand that, guys. I understand that. But it allows you, it fuels crowds more.
Yeah.
Right? Baylor was such a bear during those years because of the tempo, I thought. And now that they don't have that, it's still fine. It's a nice stadium.
It is a nice stadium.
It's not as tough as it used to be.
No, it's not. But it's comfortable for the kids.
Yeah, I get it.
Look, it's really about momentum with them.
Yeah.
They're going to run through 3-0, and they're
and they get the Clones.
And then they get Iowa State, and then we'll see. Because Iowa State's going to test whoever they play. There's one thing I know. I don't know if they'll win all those games.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll win as many as we expect them to win. But whoever's going to beat them is going to earn it.
Yeah. And won't beat themselves type of thing.
Yeah, not. I mean, look, last year they tried to beat themselves. They tried to beat themselves against Washington State. They ultimately lost, but only by two. You know, they tried to beat themselves against Kansas State, right? Had to come back because of three turnovers. Did beat themselves against Texas. They've got some overcoming and some growing up to do, but that's what's great about having a maturing team and returning so many guys is you have a chance to do that.
Iowa State takes the stage tomorrow. I think Matt Campbell's the first coach to go tomorrow. And we will obviously have a ton of coverage from that. Jay's doing some football writing. I'm doing some other stuff. I had a really good talk with the CEO from the Alamo Bowl, Derek Fox, today, and he was raving about Iowa State fans. That was a fun conversation to have. But we'll have a lot more stuff like that on the podcast network later. I'm going to have Joel Klatt and Bruce Feldman from Fox. I'll talk college football with them. And then tomorrow, again, we'll have stuff with all the Iowa State players, Matt Campbell, all that stuff. We'll be posting videos. If you're watching us on Facebook or listening on the podcast network, doing a lot more on Instagram this year, trying to build that Cyclone Fanatic account up. We're up over like 6,000 followers now, but if you don't follow us, you should, because we're going to start doing more and more content from that space. And Jay's going to go and just harass all these Big 12 coaches this afternoon so that he can get us some more information. So I hope you're enjoying your time.
I am. It's great. It's fun. I'm a rookie. I feel young again. So
good.
It's a good deal.
Good.